down with them, whatever. I'm down walking around with my great grandkids, and I have no idea. Nobody's answering the phone there. I said, well, they're probably working on the problem. So, okay, thanks. I don't work here.
Mark did an awesome job. He was our in-person interviewer for the whole week. So, thank you, Mark.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Let's not do that again.
Item 5 is presentations, county health rankings. Annual reports. Who's going to cover that?
That would be me.
Stacy?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi. For those that don't know me, I'm Stacy Wines. I'm the public health community specialist with the Division of Health. I'm going to be talking about a couple different things today. First is the Division of Health annual report is complete, and copies are over there. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. You can view at your leisure, but I did just want to point out that we do tie our annual report into our strategic plan for the division, so you'll see for each section and team the various goals and objectives and how we're doing with those, along with a lot of data and fun activities and information. So this is also on our website, but again, you can kind of view at your leisure. I will move then into kind of what the bulk of my presentation will be, which will be the county health rankings and then our Healthy People Kenosha County midterm status report, I'm calling it, because we do have a 10-year community health improvement plan that we call Healthy People Kenosha County 2020, and we are 5 years into that plan, so this is a good time to kind of look at how we're doing. And we actually have a Healthy People meeting next Friday where we're going to talk about how we're doing and do we want to change things in our plan. It's a good time to kind of do that, and do we want to change directions. You'll see poster boards around the room that we had made to look at the different committees, and you'll see a lot of the same information in the plan on the slides and on there, but it's a good visual to kind of take around and show how we're doing with Healthy People. So first off, in March, the 2015 County Health Rankings came out, and there should be a summary sheet that looks like this. This summary sheet breaks down the County Health Rankings with the health outcomes, health factors, and then it goes down to various levels. You'll see the measures and then how we rank. And how they do the rankings, it's out of 72 counties. One is excellent, 72 is what they call poor. So this is how we did this year. Unfortunately, our rankings in most of the categories went down, meaning we went to the poorer end. I will say with this though, and you can investigate further the county health rankings and look at what they use for their measures, but a lot of the data they use is at least a couple years old. So keep that in mind. We do like the county health rankings, and you'll see when I give the update for Healthy People, we use a lot of that in our report. But it is a snapshot, and it is not completely 2015. It's more 2012, 2011. But you can see health outcomes, and this sheet again, the summary sheet breaks it down even further into the different measures and how we did last year into this year. If you like data, this is your thing right here. I was looking at this. I'm not going to go through each one. A lot of it I'll touch on when I go through the Healthy People, the status report. But, you know, health behaviors is one area we like to really look at, because that is a good indicator on what people are choosing to do. Are they choosing to eat healthier? Are they choosing to exercise? And we went from 53 to 55. And again, a lot of the data is a couple years old. So I'm hoping to see in the next couple of years that start to move towards the better. Looking at clinical care, that looks at access to healthcare, we went down slightly. On the back of the sheet, you can see the social and economic factors. That's one that we really moved from 53 to 60. I will say, though, with that, you'll see two areas that are new that they added this year. And whenever they do that, the county health rankings, we always move down. So they added a measure in there looking at home inequality, so ratio of household income at the 80th percentile to income at the 20th. That was something new this year that I'm sure brought our measure down. And then the number of membership associations per 100,000 population. That's a new measure as well, and they added that in. So whenever that happens, because if you look at, we're pretty consistent with the actual data, but adding some new stuff in brought our score down. And for physical environment, we stayed the same. So again, this is a snapshot. We use this, but I like to include this now and look at this, because this really shows what we're doing in Kenosha County to address not just the county health rankings, but a lot of various health outcomes, health factors. So I'm gonna now move into this report. Just some background on Healthy People Kenosha County 2020. It's been around for years and years. We have six committees looking at different issues. Here they are: access to healthcare, healthy lifestyles, environmental health, youth health, mental health, injury prevention, and then we do have a steering committee then made up of the chairs of those committees and other members that we meet to really look at the goals and objectives, how we're doing. And this really drives, I mean, this is our CHIP, or Community Health Improvement Plan, so this is a really big driving force for us. Just kind of going into the plan, we use a lot of data, different data sets, when we developed our plan, the county health rankings being one. We have a lot of different databases that the state has, that we have internally at the health department. The Kenosha Community Health Survey that we do every few years is a great information. So you'll see that tied into a lot of this. But just starting with access to healthcare, what you'll see is the 2020 goals on the left there. So 5 years ago, that's what, as a group, we came up with as goals. Now, when we meet next week, we're gonna kind of revisit some of these to see, do we wanna continue with these? Do we wanna revamp, change, add, whatnot? You can see the goals, the specific objective that we put, the baseline at the time, and then the current status. Now, the current status, I'm lucky at times if I can get 2014 as current status. So you'll see sometimes, just the thing with data, unless it's something that I almost have control over and through the health department can have timely data, if it's something that the state or the county health rank, I can only use what they have, and at times it's 2012, 13. So you'll see that on here. But you can see then for access, the goals that we had, looking at premature deaths in Kenosha County, something from the county health rankings. And this committee in particular is one that we're gonna talk about next week with the steering committee, because it's been difficult to find kind of one thing to have this committee focus on and look at. So access might be something we integrate throughout the different committees. The chair recently stepped down, so it's kind of in flux right now anyway, so it might be a good time to kind of really look at this committee and what we want to do. But with that, the next is looking at the Kenosha immunization rate for children 2 years and younger. We have a goal, or an objective of 80%. Last year we got to 65, and this year our, for a consolidated contract objective, we have 69%. So we're slowly seeing that number go up, but we're continuing to work on it. The Kenosha County infant mortality rate among African American population, you'll see for baseline and current status, it's going up, but this one's tough because the number is so low, but if you have one death, it brings that number up. So we kind of look at a range of years, but we're doing a lot of work, as you can see in the report, with the Life Course Initiative and Collaborative. So this isn't completely true. I don't know if you want to comment any more on it, but it's not a full representation of how we're doing. Then the last one is one that we really would like to look at, is ensure all Kenosha County residents have access to a primary care provider. And this is something that does come out of the county health rankings, looking at the ratio of primary care providers to population, and our number is not very good. And this is just kind of another data set that came out of the community health survey, and this is self-reported, asking residents who report receiving primary health services from a doctor or nurse practitioner's office. And the number's starting to go down, which means, well, where are they getting their primary health services from? Emergency rooms, urgent, you know, where are they going if they're not going to a doctor or nurse practitioner? So, something to continue to look at. The next area is healthy lifestyles, and this is looking at physical activity, nutrition, binge drinking, tobacco use. One thing that I'm going to bring up to the steering committee next week is our data set for this we might want to modify, because the behavioral risk factor survey, I can't find anything current from 2011, and we just might want to revamp kind of where we're finding the data for that. But it does give you an idea, looking at adults reporting fair or poor health. It has stayed pretty consistent, 2008 to 2011. Adults who engage in regular physical activity, that number has gone down. So, but it's hard because it's 2011. It's kind of hard to determine. Looking at BMI, number went up. Binge drinking, that number actually did go down slightly. And then looking at tobacco use. And I know just from other surveys, we're improving in a lot of these areas. So that's why I think looking at our CHIP, we might want to modify some of that. Our mental health and AODA committee, you can see their goals and objectives. They're looking at the percent of Hispanic individuals represented in Kenosha County's community-based mental health and substance abuse services. They want to increase that, which we are seeing that going up. On the psychiatric hospitalization rate, we would like to see that number go down. And this committee is doing a lot. There are a lot of activities going on that they're looking at. This is something from the community health survey. Percent of Kenosha County residents who report feeling sad or blue. We're at 7, so that has stayed consistent. Percent of adults who report binge drinking, we've included that in there, and that number is continuing to kind of go high. And then the other one is just, I don't have recent data, but it's looking at households that are aware of mental health resources. That's one area. A lot of people say they don't know where to go, they don't know who to contact. So that's a big area that this committee is looking at. Next is injury prevention. There's three areas that this committee is focusing on, looking at access to lethal means through our suicide prevention coalition. Our suicide rate is staying fairly, I guess, consistent. We really would like to see it go down. We've had quite a few suicides already this year, so hopefully the number isn't going up. Motor vehicle crashes and injuries and deaths related to that number is also going up. And I don't need to bring all bad news here. I will try to look at the bright side here at the end. But looking at injuries and deaths related to falls, this is a big one that we're seeing. And Kenosha County does have a falls, I think it's Racine. Is it Racine?
It's just Kenosha.
Just Kenosha, okay, thank you. A falls coalition looking at, but this is just a table to kind of, and it goes up to 2012. That's the most recent data that I could find from the state. But looking at the death rate due to falls, age adjusted, and Kenosha County, I mean, you can see it's the pink just continuing to go up. Our youth health committee, this is specific to the youth population, looking at physical activity, reproductive health, high school graduation rate, children in poverty. You can kind of see the breakdown. One thing I wanted to point out was the teen birth rate. We've seen a pretty drastic decrease in our teen birth rate, which is wonderful to see. In 2008, we were at 44.9 per 1,000 population. We're at 25.9. So, I mean, I do like to see that. Unfortunately, though, our chlamydia rate is continuing to go up. Our graduation rate, this is something the county health rankings also look at. The number of children in poverty is something from the county health rankings, and we're seeing that number go up as well. And again, I don't like to be so bleak. You'll see in the plan or in the report, I do then put all the different activities that are going on from the committee and other organizations in the community that I'm aware of that are addressing some of these issues. So I don't just like to focus on the bad. I like to show, well, we are, as a community, we're doing a lot to look at these issues. And then the last committee is environmental health. This is really focused on asthma. So looking at the hospitalization rate for asthma and the ER visit rate. We're slowly improving. The state comes out every few years with a burden of asthma report that I pull this data from. But we do have a Kenosha Racine Asthma Coalition, and Kenosha, the Division of Health, receives an asthma grant. So again, we're doing a lot of different things looking at these issues. But that's sort of a real quick summary of the plan. I can take any questions. But yeah, again, the steering committee next week will kind of look at now what for the next 5 years, what direction do we want to go? What do we really want our focus to be? I think we've done a good job not having too many objectives and too many goals that they become lost. But really looking at the focus and what do we want the next 5 years to be.
Have you thought of tapping into some of the medical society, like state medical society, or even the local chapter, or I know AAP Wisconsin chapter has just started up a quality improvement, and one of our first objectives is it's teenage, but it's HPV.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, we haven't. That is, thank you. Yeah, that is a great resource. We haven't kind of gone that direction too much. So.
You know, I have one question too with the asthma stuff. Are they looking at use of controller medications versus use of emergency medications? There's some ratio of getting this public in AMR that some big researcher has looked into, and when they increase, use of controller meds, called the decrease of your short-acting bronchodilators. Looks at it. I think that they looked at Medicaid data for that to kind of see, as far as if they're refilling prescriptions, and at least gives you an idea if that's an area that needs to be focused on, as using controller meds versus, always heading for the opioid.
We did. That's a part of the grant, the asthma grant.
Okay.
Working with their action plans so that families understand use of the daily medications and not what else to do, and then run into the emergency room. So trying to reduce those emergency room rates.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you, and sorry I'm late.
That's okay.
What for patients, this would be an easy job. with the access to healthcare, so are you using the folks who say, yes, I've seen a primary care provider or whatever, is that sort of the surrogate marker you're using right now?
Well, the data we get for this report is county health ranking data, which is, they pull it from Health Resources and Service Administration. So I don't know if they just kind of look at our population and then the number of, it's just a ratio of primary care providers to population. They also, the county health rankings also look at dentists, and you can see that in this sheet. They look at dentists and mental health, and mental health providers. You can see the ratio.
So they're not actually just sort of, I got the impression maybe they're like calling 200 people and saying.
Oh, you're talking about the graph on them.
Well, you're saying they just look at the ratio is what?
So the ratio is what they use for the goal and objective that we used.
Okay.
The graph is from the community health survey that goes out, that Aurora, we work with Aurora on, and they do, they call, oh, I can't remember. It's a random sampling that they call, I think it's 400 adults, and they ask this question. And it's broken down by, you know, physician, nurse practitioner, and there were a couple different levels. And I just was curious, I just kind of plucked this out, but it is a self-reported.
But also doesn't differentiate if they're choosing not to go because they got a huge deductible,
right,
or if they have a doctor, but they just.
Right. I could do a whole presentation just on the community health survey because, I mean, there's a plethora of data because they do get into access issues on, you know, do you have health insurance? You know, what are the barriers? So there's a whole piece just on that.
But I don't think they drill down to the why, and I think that's what
you're asking.
The survey doesn't drill down to the why from the packet that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
We actually got a copy of the survey that if you'd like to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I could send you everything.
It's pretty thick.
Yeah.
But I think you might be interested.
Mm-hmm.
Light reading.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's very complicated. Any other questions? More to come then.
Thank you. Cindy, did they approve the minutes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's
where you go. Down a half. Do we have any kind of
beer?
No.
Okay.
No. All right, then we'll go to that school nurse program.
Hi, I'm Bridget Cardinelli, one of the school nurses, the school nurse team lead. Actually, so today I'll be telling you about our school nurse consultant team. In just a second. Kenosha County Division of Health School Nurse Consultants are made up of 8 school nurses, and we oversee the care for 37 schools, and that doesn't include the 3 main high schools, comprehensive high schools. Our ratio is 1 full-time school nurse to about 3,600 students. Even though we're 8 school nurses, we equal 4.5 full-time employees. There's 3 of us that work between 32 and 40 hours a week for school nursing. And the other 5, their hours are also made up of other grants, so they're available to their schools nearly every day of the week, but they may have a smaller number of hours dedicated to the schools. Our main goal is to keep the students healthy, because we all know that healthier students learn better. So in order to do that, we start off with identifying what their medical concerns are when they're coming in. A little caption down below says at kindergarten registration, do you want your child in the peanut-free class, the gluten-free class, or shellfish allergy class, and kind of as a joke. But what we're doing is identifying, you know, what's your student dealing with and how can we help them navigate through their day. So in doing that, we'll develop emergency health plans, which are a simple plan that the staff can use, that if Johnny has asthma and this is what he's doing, this is what you do. And then we can always, by phone call, talk to our staff and what they're seeing. With the new technology nowadays, too, I'll get pictures sent to me on an iPhone of this is what this kid's rash looks like. So it's kind of helped us change a little bit throughout the years with how we take care of our 37 schools. A large part of our time is also medications, making sure that they're coming in and they're not expired, the appropriate dose is recommended on the label, is matching the order, things like that. A lot of education and training for the staff, as well as the parents and students, Heimlich maneuver, anaphylaxis, what it looks like, how to give an EpiPen. All of our schools have stock EpiPens so that they can give Epi to somebody who is not documented as having a previous anaphylaxis reaction. So we're teaching everybody in the schools how to use that EpiPen safely. And case management of of all the students, but particularly those with chronic conditions that they're dealing with every day. For instance, diabetes, will go in and look and see how their days have been, what their blood sugars are trending as. What our student population looks like for our, we have 17,000 plus students in our 37 schools. About 2,110 students have the five most prevalent health conditions, which are asthma, allergy, seizure, cardiac condition, and diabetes. And it's actually 12%, I apologize for the typo there, but that's 12% for students coming in every day dealing with something chronically health-wise. So for those students who have maybe an elevated need to educate the staff around them, we develop care plans, and this year we had to write over 900 care plans for each individual student. The numbers don't match because we don't always write individualized ones for students with asthma because they follow a generalized health plan, and then if they veer from that, we'll do something specifically for them. So what that looks like in graph form for some of those, this is data we've collected since 2004-2005 school year. And students with health concerns usually ranges around 3,000. The population doesn't vary all that much, maybe within a couple of, maybe 1,000 students, give or take, throughout the years. And last year we had a very high number, and then this year we had a very low number. So there was a change in the data that we received.
Why do you think there was such a big drop?
I can't wait to get to that. I can hold you off for three slides. yay, it's kind of good. So the next one is with asthma. Also, you can see how it varied, obviously, from last year to this year with a drop of about 200 students reporting asthma. And diabetes, that's actually only a difference of 4 students. It's because of the way the graph is, but went from 52 to 48. And we did have a high amount of seniors with diabetes, so the ones coming in, you know, they kind of shifts a little bit. And food allergies also took a dip this year as well. So why we think it happened, and I'll be interested to see how it trends from this point on, but we had a change in how we're getting the information from parents. They're enrolling online using Infinite Campus. They enrolled online the year before as well, but they had used paper emergency cards at most of the schools the year previously. And then this school year, going to the electronic era, they opted not to do paper emergency cards. And traditionally, our school nurses, that was their form of how they got their information, was through the paper emergency card. And then we also had the electronic database that we could pull from as well. And so while they did have the opportunity to go in and register their kids with help, I think, well, as the school nurse, we've brainstormed why it happened, that either they got tired by the time they got to that point, it wasn't user-friendly, or we had a whole lot of healthy students influx in 4K. We don't know. And we'll be able to see how that trend goes. And we've given KUSD all this information of what it's looked like and where we thought maybe things weren't being reported. So that's our thought. But Infinite Campus is also a tremendous help to our school nurses as well. So goods and bads with every new changeover. But this one, yeah, and I'll talk more about why we do like it, but we have a little bit of work to do. So, and the school nurses helped train all the staff, too, with how Infinite Campus was used. All our medications were put in, their health office visits were put in, and it was able to track a lot of information that we had been tracking on paper and hand counting. So we do like Infinite Campus. Medications are a large part of the school nurse's day, checking things in, training and educating staff on how to actually give the medication, whether it's an oral medication, injected, inhaled, emergency medications and why you would give it, what it looks like, what the emergency looks like. We review the medication forms that come in. They're orders written by the doctor and signed off by the parent to make sure that it matches what that medication should look like. And we review medications for field trips, including overnight field trips, which these kids go to New York, Ohio, Washington, D.C., you name it. And they have to take all those medications that they don't take during the day at school. They take all their medications. So when those occur, that's quite an influx of medication orders that we're checking off and faxing back to the doctor as the bus is pulling up. Please sign and fax back. So very exciting life of the school nurse. And then throughout this year, we checked in or monitored over 2,000 medications within the school office. Another exciting part of our life is family life curriculum, which is the growth and development classes. We teach 4th, 5th, and 6th grade separately, boys and girls separately. And then in 7th grade, we teach them all together. And this year, we had 5,309 students in our classes. Staff trainings, which will begin in 2 short months. In the middle of August, we start back with staff diabetes care, anaphylaxis and EpiPens, Diastat, which is a rectal suppository for seizure activity, asthma management, and the entire KUSD staff is educated on asthma management. We have a separate in-service for that. The abdominal thrust or Heimlich maneuvers for the kitchen staff and anybody who may have snacks in their classroom. So that's pretty much all the staff as well. And there is a state mandated that all staff giving medication receives training, demonstration from the nurse, and a DPI approved test that they take online. And the school nurses last year helped develop a little more user-friendly test for the staff to take and sent it off, and it was DPI approved. So all of the staff is currently recertifying themselves and being able to give medications. Screenings, this is also when Infinite Campus became very useful to us. The screenings can be entered into the database, and you can pull out either who was referred or who did we miss, and we were able to reach, we hit 92% this year for vision. Our goal is 100, which I think next year is where more user savvy with the system, we'll be able to hit 100% of our students that are in second and fifth grade for vision screening. And then we can track other ones too. So. Dental varnish is offered in 13 school sites. We've chosen the 13 schools that have the highest free and reduced lunch counts. We offer 3 clinics per year, and that's for the kindergarten and first graders. Kenosha Community Health Center has the higher grades covered, so that's why we've offered it to kindergarten and first grade. This year was our highest year yet for number of dental varnish applications, 1,245. In the past, it was 900 and then went down to about 700, and so we were pretty proud of ourselves this year. And then we referred 334 of those cases on to further further care for dental. So. That's it in a nutshell, but we all know that healthy children are better learners. Any questions?
Do you have any idea how many other ones you send out for the dental care?
How many received care? We don't. We do send a letter with them that asks that the dentist sign it and send it back, and we don't usually get those back. We do follow up phone calls with the ones who probably need to be seen yesterday and try to help them get into their appointments, but then we're not very productive at going back and finding out who went through with that follow through.
Are the majority of these children medical assistants?
Majority are.
So you're running into a problem getting them into the institute?
Getting them in and with all the barriers that come with that, whether the parent can't get
health,
there.
Right.
Because the health clinic right now is booking out until December.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Kind of on that note, Park had brought up about a year ago kind of the issue I explained, you know, why kind of a private office doesn't take medical assistance, and it's because of the low reimbursement rates. In next year's budget in the state, they're going to run a pilot program where they're increasing the fees to customary and reasonable, and I think that's going to be a huge success in those counties, one of them being Racine, so it doesn't really impact us, but I think what's probably going to happen is they're going to see that that's a far more efficient way of delivering service, and, you know, unfortunately, it's who knows how far down the road, but I think it's a step in the right direction.
I think even if it is in Racine, it'll impact us because mm-hmm. we have a lot of people from Racine coming here
right.
for
yes.
treatment.
Well, yeah, and the they had a dental clinic in Racine that just recently closed. So I'm not really sure what impact that is having on the Kenosha community dental clinic. It must be increasing the patient load there. So
the Racine community dental clinic closed?
Mm-hmm.
Which is where I live for. Health center.
Okay. But the answer is, in looking at some of these numbers, access to care, and you alluded to it that, that's not the only reason. It's not the ratio. It's the dental population. Only 50% of people actually go to the dentist. I think the access to care problem for dental is certainly. With the medical assistance patients, and it's because that's really the only place they can go.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's a pretty obvious solution. As you increase the rate, there are plenty of, I'd be happy to see any number of patients, and I'm sure, most of my colleagues would also. So hopefully we'll see something positive come out of this pilot program and expand it to the rest of the state.
I have a question. The percentage of diabetics in the school that you're seeing issues with, that's a high percentage.
That's the actual number. So we have 48 out of 17,000 students that are diagnosed. 48 students this year that are diagnosed with diabetes.
Type 1 or 2 or
It's
both?
Type 1, not okay. Both. Yep. We haven't tracked the type 2 on graph-wise, but I could probably find that information.
I think that would be an interesting one because that ties into your obesity.
Mm-hmm. It does, and it's not always quick to be reported by parents because it can be managed at home, and a lot of them either are embarrassed or just don't write it out because it's not something that, obviously the type 1s will know even if they didn't put it in registration form or on the emergency card because they come with their insulin. So that's a pretty exact number. You can't hide from us. But the type 2 diabetics, I think, are very, very underreported.
Questions?
Any other questions? Thank you. Okay,
thank you.
I just have a few things to update everybody. The Southeastern Regional Director position, which had been vacant since last summer, actually, since around July 4th that George Cameron left, the position has been filled, and it's filled by an individual that you might recognize the name, Mike Williams. He worked for the Sheriff's Department, and he also worked with Glenn on the Family Life. The Living Free curriculum, and so he will be the new Southeastern Regional Director. He has been working since 2008 in the Milwaukee area with parole individuals and in the supervisory capacity. We're continuing on with our electronic health system, and that's moving forward. We're evaluating our future state at this point in time. And so looking at how our system that we currently have, how that would move into the future state with the vendor that we've selected. Environmental, Mark's happy to report he's fully staffed, but they're all young people. So since we were talking about this, it's September of 2011 was when Randy Worthing left, and we've seen the fallout of all of that knowledge that has left our health department through the environmental section. And so he has a very young staff. Six of the nine staff Six of the nine staff continue training. And one of those has been on the job 3 years, and he just received his RS, or he's working for his RS. And one is here 2 years and just received his RS, his registered sanitarian license or certification, and four of those six are less than 1 year on the job. So Mark has a very young staff. It's basically him and Brad that are.
I hired one guy older than me though, just so he got my jokes.
So he's working on it. They've been busy. Our lab, they're preparing for audits that start up again this summer. nursing section, and of course environmental. They just dealt with the salmonella outbreak, and we had 70 probable cases. 35 of those were confirmed. It was related to carnitas, and right now Gwen and Stacy and Mark and the team, they're all working on an after action report, which is in the development, and they'll be working with the state that'll have a full, probably published article or report on this particular outbreak and the impact on that. And Mark will be working closely with the restaurant on future inspections. Our home visiting team, we just hired a new nurse, and she actually made it to in the newspaper before she even came on board. So, you know, we only hire overachievers. And so she started out today, Jean Swyko-Klee, and so she'll be working with our parents as teachers, our home visiting program that sees moms that have, they're on their second child or more. Grants, let's see here, our Life Course Initiative grant, they're going to be doing a mid-year oral presentation to the funders. We also submitted a proposal to expand or support our early childhood comprehensive system, the community pilot project. And so we're waiting to hear the results on those supplemental dollars. Our adult death review team model was selected to present at the American Public Health Association poster session. So we're very proud of that. We're continuing, we're receiving funding to mentor Cudahy County Health Department as they move towards accreditation. And also we submitted a letter of commitment for funding in order to collaborate with our department or division of aging on a dementia-friendly community. So that's a concept, a model concept that our community is moving towards, and the Division of Aging and Disability Services will be the lead on that, but we'll be receiving some additional funding for public health to support that initiative. And I think, you know, some of the data that you saw from Stacy, us aging baby boomers, you're seeing implications, whether it's falls or other information that we're seeing, some of that, those negative numbers that are reflected in our report. Staffing, we have two public health nurses to hire. One will be a nurse family partnership program individual. We did hire someone and she declined on the date she was to start. Her former employer offered her more money. So we might start seeing implications regarding to our wages and inability to retain or hire people. But I believe there's some current data with millennials. I think they have 22 jobs during their lifetime, which was something that's phenomenal. So, you know, as we look at hiring practices and retention, the ability to retain, you know, we really have to look at the millennial generation, what drives them, how do we retain them. But it's different than my generation, let me tell you. It's a learning curve for me. The other person is a school nurse, which Bridget will be sitting in on those interviews as she seeks another person to join her team before the fall. We also have, let's see here, one retirement last week. That was Marilyn Huntoon, retired last week, and of course, how many days, Nancy?
23.
It was not that long.
Marilyn had a long time, huh?
Yeah. And so we have also one person on maternity leave, and one of our individuals shifted to another county levy position. She was a grant position, and she shifted to a county levy position in the planning and development. And that's all I have. I do want to say, though, that I was out of the office when this whole salmonella broke out. Lucky me. Oh, but yeah. Our staff did an absolutely phenomenal job under the leadership of Gwen and Mark and, of course, Stacy. And we functioned under incident command structure, which really was a beautiful way to just organize everything. And I think they had a couple of maybe minutes of confusion and chaos, but beyond that, then it all fell into place and really functioned like clockwork. So kudos to the staff of the health department for the great work. And long hours, too.
Is the management there easy to work with? And the reason I ask is because I used to be the county board supervisor for that district, and it's only a block away, halfway from us. We used to have weekly garbage complaints behind the building.
Right.
Opened up, spill, and photographed it, rodents, and finally. And every time I went over there, nobody spoke English.
Right.
But they did speak English.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were compliant?
Oh, yeah. They're very compliant. Worked with us. Last week, they went through the whole establishment again with the state.
Okay.
You know, because we wanted to do some observations and documentations that they do in this NEFIS CDC program. They collect all this information, and then that's supposed to help narrow it down to what exactly could have happened.
Okay.
So we had the state and Department of Agriculture and Department of Health down there too. So
I have a question, Cindy, about that. Because of the situation that happened, and there's some lawsuits apparently in the works, so your department's going to be required to give out all the reports that you have, that you've generated, and
We'll be working with our corporation counsel, who will review the information prior to release, so that it's objective information. Typically, it's lab reports, very objective information that's released.
And so far, in fact, Gwen and I are going to meet as soon as we get down here, but so far the requests have coming in for client information. It's attorneys seeking information on their clients as opposed to broader information. And they have a right to receive that with a release.
Any other corporate counsel?
No report.
Any other business? I guess as closing board comment, just once again thank Nancy for all her hard work.
It's been my pleasure.
Accept a motion to adjourn.
I'm moving.
Second. Your job is wonderful. Yeah.